Good afternoon, everybody. Hope everyone's enjoying TechEd 2011 this year. I know you're freshly back from lunch, hopefully refreshed and ready to experience what's coming in Service Manager 2012. My name's Justin Cook. I'm a principal consultant with Data3 in Brisbane. I'm the national lead for the systems management and managed operating environment solution sets. And co-presenting with me today is Steve Bird. And Steve's the national lead for our business architecture group within the strategic consulting practice. So before we get into this session, I just want to get an understanding of how many people in the audience have actually deployed Service Manager 2010 in their environment today. There's only a limited number of you. What about how many people are looking at deploying Service Manager 2012 within the next 12 months? That's more like it. So for those guys, and particularly people that didn't raise their hands, hopefully what you'll be able to take away by the end of this session is that there's some really exciting features coming in Service Manager 2012 that will fit well into your environment and at least encourage you to go away and evaluate the product. So what we're going to cover off today is Steve's going to introduce you to this new concept of IT as a service. He's also going to talk through briefly some of the major updates that are coming in the product. I'm going to cover off on the incremental products, which are improvements to the existing features that were already available in Service Manager 2010 today. We're going to talk about the service catalog and the service offerings and request offerings that are available. Then Steve's going to take you through release management and why that new feature in Service Manager 2012 is so important. And finally, I want to introduce you to the System Center Data Warehouse, the capabilities that that provides to not only Service Manager, for the rest of the System Center family and existing products that you might have deployed in your environment today. So with that, I'll just hand over to Steve.
Okay, thanks, Justin. So I'm a business architect and I work for strategic consulting, which doesn't sound very technical for somebody presenting at TechEd. So I thought I'd explain why I'm here presenting Microsoft System Center Service Manager to you. And it's really around this concept of IT as a service. You might also be wondering what a business architect is. Well, I used to be a business analyst, and then somebody suggested to me that I should call myself a business architect. I said, why is that? And they said, well, if you can call yourself an architect, you can earn twice as much money. Next day, I became a business architect. But the reality is, for a long time, I've been helping businesses improve their business and achieve business outcomes through process analysis, process re-engineering, and developing requirements for IT solutions to help the business improve those outcomes. And IT service management, if you understand, and I got into IT service management because I wanted to make sure those IT solutions could be supported and operated and continue to deliver the business outcomes that the business wanted. Now, I quickly realised, and I hope you all realise, that once you look at IT and you work in IT, you are actually working for a business. And I'm not talking about the business you support, I'm talking about the business of IT. And that business is a service business. The job of IT is to deliver services to your users and your customers so that they can do their business. And if you understand that concept, and I read something recently where the suggestion was that IT shouldn't really focus on technological excellence, it should focus on meeting customer requirements. And if you understand that concept and you understand that you're in the business, the service business of IT, you can understand the concept of IT as a service. So we've all heard of infrastructure as a service, platform as a service, software as a service, and IT as a service is no different. The idea of defining services is that we can deliver to our customer what they need to do their business without them understanding what goes on underneath that to deliver that service. So your customer understands what they need to understand how to request that, and they need to be confident that you can deliver that service to the levels they require to do their business. But they don't need to know how you do it. And that is really the fundamental behind IT as a service. And at the heart of delivering effective IT as a service is a good service management system. And that is where Microsoft System Center Service Manager comes in. Now, to design System Center Service Manager as an effective IT as a service management system, we first need to understand the objectives of IT as a service. And for Service Manager, these objectives have been defined as you can see on the screen. So just like any business, we want to be able to reduce costs and improve what we deliver to our customers. So we want to improve the service levels and we want to improve the speed with which we deliver services. Now, in addition to that, to run an effective business and to run IT as a service effectively, we need data. We need the data to understand how we're delivering those services and how we can improve how we deliver those services. And our customers need that data to be sure that we're delivering the services they need at the service levels they require. And if they're paying for those services, they definitely need data to be sure they're getting value for their money. And we need to be compliant. We need to be compliant with the legislation and the regulatory frameworks that govern our industries. So having identified these objectives, we can then look for some frameworks that are going to help us develop processes to meet those objectives. And within IT as a service, we're very familiar with the IT service management frameworks that support that. And most commonly, and not all of them, MOF, the Microsoft Operations Framework, ITIL and COBIT are the three core frameworks that Service Manager has been designed around. And once we understand the processes within those frameworks, we can identify the key strategies we're going to target, again, to deliver those IT as a service objectives. And for service management, I'm going to talk about these in a little bit more detail in the following slides, and then Justin's going to go into these in even more detail and demonstrate how Service Manager delivers on these strategies. The four key strategies we're looking at are automation, self-service, standardization, and compliance. So how does Service Manager enable automation? It enables controlled automation. It enables it through automation services, centralized data storage, and integration. So centralized data storage is a centralized CMDB that has a single view of all the information, a single consistent view of all the information, so you can manage your IT environment in a controlled way. It has connectors to all the other system center products. Again, so you can have a single integrated view of your IT environment. And with System Center Service Manager 2012, it has automation through workflows that can leverage .NET components and PowerShell components to automate processes. And you can also automate processes natively through the connection through System Center Orchestrator as well. How does Service Manager enable self-service? So with Service Manager 2010, you already had an end-user self-service portal. With 2012, you've now got an advanced portal that's based on SharePoint. So this is really a key interface for the user to come in and request services and understand how those services are going to be delivered. You've got self-service reports and dashboards. Again, in Service Manager 2010, we already had dashboards, but now you've got an increased flexibility of self-service reporting through connection with OLAP cubes, so that your customer can use whatever reporting tool they want, even Excel, to slice and dice their own reports that you present to them. And finally, through the Exchange connector, you have quite a rich email interface so that the customer can interact with Service Manager via email, either from a desktop email client or a mobile email client. How does Service Manager enable standardization? Well, primarily it's through process workflows. And those process workflows are defined in templates. So you can define any number of templates and put a process workflow behind those templates so that you can be sure you're going to deliver those services following a consistent process every time and your customer will get a consistent experience. There's also standardization within the CMDB as the data model within the CMDB is common between Service Manager and Operations Manager. And finally, there's now the service catalog through the self-service end-user portal that allows us in Service Manager to define service offerings and control how the user requests those services. So we can control and standardize the way in which a user and a customer is going to request the services you deliver. In terms of compliance, again, through the processes we deliver through workflows and templates, standard processes, through controlled self-service and through automation, all these things ensure compliance because if you're following an agreed process that is compliant, you know you're always going to be compliant. In addition, there are management packs for governance, risk, and compliance that convert a lot of legal jargon and legal requirements and regulatory requirements into standard processes and templates. So you don't have to interpret that for yourself. You can apply that management pack and you can follow those processes and guarantee that you're going to be compliant within your regulatory framework. And finally, with connection through System Center Configuration Manager, you can establish baseline configurations that are monitored in real time and be alerted whenever your environment is not compliant with what you've already established as being a compliant baseline. So having looked at those four key strategies at a high level, and as I said, Justin's going to go over these in more detail and give you some demonstration of how Service Manager actually executes on those strategies, I just want to cover off the major investments areas for Service Manager 2012. And for the few of you that were experienced with Service Manager 2010, hopefully you'll agree with me that they did a really good job of providing functionality in terms of integration and configuration management and automation within Service Manager 2010. However, I think what was forgotten was really the customer view. And that was reflected in feedback around the self-service portal particularly. So in Service Manager 2012, we've got a brand new end-user portal based in SharePoint. And within that end-user portal, there is a heavy focus on the service catalog that allows users to understand the services you offer and can request those services through a self-service catalog. There's now release management, so that was a key ITIL component or IT service management component that was missing out of Service Manager 2010. and we'll look at that more closely later. And now there's some additional connectors, so connectors with Microsoft System Center Orchestrator and Virtual Machine Manager. And this is a really key piece of functionality in terms of delivering a private cloud infrastructure. So now we can deliver self-service virtual machine deployment through Service Manager using these connectors. And finally, as I said, there's significant improvements in reporting. So now you have a fully functional data warehouse with data cubes, OLAP cubes, and analysis libraries built in. So with that, I'll hand back over to Justin to go into a bit more detail about some of the things I've spoken about.
Thanks, mate. Okay, so what I want to talk about now is some of the improvements that have been made over existing features within Service Manager 2010. Now, the result of these changes are the result of you providing feedback, the users out in the real world using Service Manager 2010, identifying areas that could be improved, and also identifying issues with both bugs and performance. So the key message here from Microsoft is the fact that they're listening and also that they take the feedback seriously. So it's really important that certainly all of us out in the real world using the product continue to provide this feedback. Anyone that's using Service Manager 2010 would know that we can measure our SLAs of our incidents that are created, but the trouble is it's targeted at an organization running a service desk that runs 24/7. We don't have the ability to pause the time it takes for an incident to be completed when we're outside of our business hours. So the issue here is that we're not truly reflecting how we're performing against our target SLAs. With 2012, we have the ability now to define calendars, and within those calendars, we can say our core business hours are 8 till 6. So when we want to measure SLAs, only measure during those business hours. So that's really important. There's a much tighter relationship between parent and child work items. So sure, within 2010, we could have a parent change, and then we could link a number of child changes as child as related work items. But the trouble was, if we resolved or closed a change or an incident, those child objects wouldn't get affected. Now we can define through the configuration the relationship between those items. So if we resolve an incident or if we complete a change, we can tell it to automatically go and change the status of any child objects as well. There's some improvements to the AD connector. So now we have the ability to use an LDAP query to identify objects that we want to import into the CMDB as CIs. A number of new PowerShell commandlets. Subscription infrastructure improvements, so additional ways that we can trigger notifications. And the next one, parallel activities is really important because when we're performing changes within our environment, typically actions that we need to complete as part of that change would be performed in parallel. With 2010, all we could do would have a sequential list of actions that needed to be completed, but now we have the ability to set them up in parallel. And of course, there's performance improvements and a number of bug fixes. So Steve's introduced us all to the concept of IT as a service. Let's have a look at the architecture behind Service Manager that actually enables us to deliver that. So there's three key layers we could think of. Firstly, the presentation layer, which is where we're presenting our IT service offerings to our users. We've got a workflow layer, and the workflow layer is about defining processes and also driving the automation to get the service request completed. Then finally, all of this rich data contained within a CMDB that enables standardization and compliance. So let's break this down a little bit. Firstly, through the presentation layer, we have an end-user self-service portal that can be filtered based on user roles, and it provides access to the self-service features of Service Manager. We've got a service catalog that includes service offerings and request offerings, and you'll see why that's important and how valuable that is when I get to the first demo. Now, in the workflow layer, we can break that down into processes for the service requests and also automation for the service requests. So this is really important and really valuable. Certainly gets me really excited about what we're going to be able to offer customers once 2012 is released. So think about, you've got a service desk that only operates between your business hours of, say, 8 till 6. But a user needs a service performed outside of those business hours. If we've got services defined as request offerings within our service catalog, a user could go to the portal, request that their user gets added to a security group within AD. We have some workflow defined behind that that dictates what needs to take place in order for that to happen. And we could then fire off a runbook within Orchestrator to go and perform that task Service manager monitors that task, detects that it's complete, emails the user, and they've had that service request fulfilled outside of business hours without any interaction from any other user other than the user themselves. So you think about that, that's really important because now we're saving time of our IT staff to concentrate on less minor tasks like adding users to groups and focus on more important tasks or projects to enhance IT service offerings that we provide to our users. So Service Manager 2012 introduces this concept of service request fulfillment processing. Really, behind the service request, it's a workflow that defines what needs to take place within that service request. It can take inputs from business events or subscriptions. Some of the action items within the request could be notifications or approval steps. But then, there's this interaction with System Center Orchestrator 2012 using the Orchestrator connector. So we can now invoke runbooks from Service Manager, and I'll talk about and demonstrate how easy that is and how important that is with the changes with Orchestrator 2012. But we can also monitor the status. Now the data, so the CMDB enables standardization and compliance. So we've got this integrated CMDB that pulls in data from multiple data sources within our organization. Anybody in the audience that has another service desk tool would know the complexities associated with getting valuable data into your CMDB, or at least data that you can rely on. So there's a number of connectors available for Service Manager that simplify this. Firstly, out of the box, there's an Active Directory connector that enables us to pull users, groups, printers, and computer objects out of AD into the CMDB. There's a connector for Config Manager that enables us to pull hardware and software inventory and associate that with the computer objects that we've already imported, plus software update statuses as well. Two connectors for Ops Manager, a CI connector to import information that's discovered as part of the discovery rules in management packs in Ops Manager, but an alert connector as well. Using the alert connector, we can automatically create incidents within Service Manager based on Ops Manager detecting that there's an issue. And now there's these two new connectors, one for Virtual Machine Manager 2012. That gives us the ability to import information about private clouds that we've got defined, virtual machines that we've already got deployed, and virtual machine templates that we want to make available to our users for execution. And then using the Orchestrator connector, we can now import information about runbooks. And I'll show you that during the demo. A couple more slides before we jump into the demo. The CMDB enables standardization and compliance. As I mentioned, we've got those data sources that are imported via the connectors. We define Service Manager templates that capture our business process and actually the role of the runbooks within the process. Then we have models and defaults that standardize the offerings that we want to present to our end users, so these offerings can be executed over and over, and we know they're executed in a consistent way. And we create these request offerings that request specific end user inputs from the end users that are then mapped back to properties required as part of the workflow. And finally, we can filter items within the service catalog based on user roles. So everybody knows that to use Service Manager before or Operations Manager before, we have this concept of user roles, which enables us to filter what people see within the console and what they can do. That principle now applies to the web console as well. So we've got this single service catalog available in our environment. We might have IT staff, VIPs, and end users. But the services that we have in our service catalog might not be appropriate for every user. So we have the ability to use the user roles and control what the users see. So we present all services to IT and only a limited set of sub-services to our end users. So that's really important. Now I just want to quickly talk on the interaction with the Orchestrator because this has significantly changed. Can I see a show of hands in the audience how many people have either looked at, worked with, or have implemented Apala 6.x in their environment today? That's a limited set of guys, okay, and girls. So currently with Apalis, for those that don't know, Apalis has a number of integration packs available that enable the product to connect differing systems together. So with Service Manager 2010, we could use Apalis to connect Service Manager to another management tool like HP OpenView. Apalis would initiate the connection between the two products and could, based on a trigger within OpenView, we could then create an incident within Service Manager. With Orchestrator, that now changes. Orchestrator 2012 introduces this Orchestrator web service that enables Service Manager to initiate a connection to Orchestrator. So that means we don't have to wait for a Parlous to initiate the connection. When we need to kick off a workflow, a runbook, we can initiate that execution from our workflow. So let's have a look at how that works. Firstly, with the Orchestrator connector, we import the runbooks into Service Manager. Once we've got the runbook imported, we create a runbook activity that defines the parameters that we need to pass back to Orchestrator to actually kick off that execution. Then we create a request template that defines the workflow and a request offering that defines the user input required. Then the user goes to the web portal, creates a service request based on that offering that you've built, and then Service Manager both invokes the runbook and monitors the success or the failure of that runbook execution. So for those that have Service Manager 2010 deployed in their environment, what you're seeing here is the new Service Manager 2012 end user portal. And you'd have to agree that that is a significant improvement on the portal that's available today. It's built completely on Silverlight web parts, available to be hosted on SharePoint Foundation 2010 or higher. The great thing about it is you can customize the web parts out of the box using tools that you're familiar with, but you can also customize the portal by adding additional web parts or use those web parts in your existing SharePoint sites that you've got configured. Now, some of the portal features, we quickly talked about being able to scope the service catalog based on user roles, but we've also got the ability now to create forms dynamically. With 2010, if we wanted to create forms for our end users, we had to use Visual Studio or the authoring console. So that meant you needed to understand the classes associated with it, you needed to have some development knowledge. Now when you create your request offering, you define your user inputs, Service Manager has the smarts to dynamically build that form for us and present it into the service catalog. So I'll quickly skim over some of the new terminology. I'm sure you've all picked it up by now. So service requests, in the concept of Service Manager, is a work item that's used for requesting standard IT services. Then when we're talking about request fulfillment, and you'll see service request fulfillment within the console, it's just the process for managing the service requests that have been executed. Service catalog is just the set of service offerings and request offerings we make available to our users. Request offering is a request offered to our users, i.e. add me to a group, create me a mailbox, give me more space in my home drive. And then a service offering is a way that we can group these requests together. So we could have user-based services or AD-based services. Then a technical service is a service map. So a service map is a diagram that demonstrates all the components that are included in my messaging infrastructure or my Active Directory. Even though we've covered off on a fair bit of this, the reason this slide is important is particularly for people that go away after this session and want to know the process for creating a request offering within Service Manager utilizing a runbook. First of all, we create a request template, and the request template defines the processes that we want to run, and it's really all about driving the automation and being able to reuse that request template over and over for different request offerings. Now, the request offering is where we start to map out our user input to the required fields within the template, and then we can dynamically build the form within the portal. Then we add that request offering to an existing service offering or build a new service offering, and that's added to the portal homepage in the service catalog. We can filter based on user roles, so access to those services and those request offerings. And then finally, when the request is triggered, it actually goes and triggers the workflows, the notifications, as defined by the process within the template. All right, so here's the scenario we're going to walk through. We've already imported the runbook. We're going to configure a request offering. A user's going to request the service. The service will go through and get created, the service request. The runbook will get executed, and we'll show that it actually goes and performs a function. All right. I'm sure everybody's sick of PowerPoint and ready for a demo. So here's a demonstration end user portal that I've built. What we can see here, on the left-hand side, we've got access to the home, which is giving us access to the service catalog. We've got my request, where I can see all of the requests that me as a user has submitted over time. And then if I have any approval requests or activities that need to be performed, they could be manual activities, they'll appear up here under my activities. So what we can see here, we've grouped these together, and these are all the service offerings that we make available to our end users. So if we hop into the AD Services service offering, we're going to see a list of request offerings that are available to our users. So now, I'll hop across to Orchestrator and I'll show you the runbook that we're going to utilize as part of this demo. So here's Orchestrator. What we've got here is we've got a runbook activity created. And you'll see this first step here is an initialized data, and I've renamed it to start runbook. If I go to the properties of that, there's two parameters that I require to be passed to execute this runbook. And I need the username, and I need the runbook ID from Service Manager. Now, I need the runbook ID because I'm going to extract some information from that runbook during the process. And before I jump into Service Manager, also, just to prove that this is a real live demo, I'll jump into the Members tab, and you'll notice that there's no members on that Active Directory security group at the moment. So I'll hop across, I'm going to hop into the console, and you'll see when we're in the library, we now have this new runbooks view. I'll click on that. Based on the properties I've defined within the Orchestrator connector, I've imported a set of runbooks from Orchestrator 2012. The one that we're going to use today is TechEd Add User to AD Group Runbook. If I go to the properties of that, you'll see that it's got the two parameters that I identified on that initialized data step, which was the first step in the runbook. So what I need to do, first of all, is I need to create a runbook automation activity template for this runbook. Click OK, and it's going to open up a form for me to edit. Give it the title. I can add additional information if I need. And I've also got this tick box here that says is ready for automation. If I don't tick that box, when the workflow executes, it will wait for me to manually kick off the runbook execution. For the purpose of the demo, I want it to be automated. If I come across to Runbook, we'll see those two parameters that are required. At the moment, it's a little hard to see, but you can see there we've got text 1, mapped to property text 1, mapped to property text 2. I'm going to actually automate passing the Runbook ID across to Orchestrator because the user doesn't know what that is, but Service Manager does. So I've got the ability to map that property. I'm going to select the Runbook automation activity, work item, and I'm going to select the work item ID. And we'll click OK. So now I've created a template that can be used over and over for that runbook within Service Manager. So that when I go and now create my request templates, I can just reference that runbook activity and it will already be pre-configured for me. So I'll jump down into templates and we'll go and create our request template. The class of object I want is service request. Click OK. Now again, that's going to open up the form for me so that I can go and edit that request template. And what I'm going to do in here is I'm going to define some properties of that for that template, including the urgency, the priority, and we'll give it a name. Set my urgency to low and my impact to low because I'm only adding a user to a group. Now I can jump across to activities. What you can see now is we've got a real workflow, authoring workspace where we can map out our activities as you would within a normal flowchart. So the first step I want to do is I'm going to include, typically with adding a user to a security group, you wouldn't add an approval activity, but I just want to demonstrate the capability that you can do that. Because there will be services where you want approval to take place before it actually goes and kicks off the service request. We go review activity. I'll give it a name. I can set a stage if I want, put that at approval. And in here you can see we've got two options. We could say that the line manager, based on my Active Directory user object, must approve it. Or we could manually add in some approvers. For this demo, I'm just going to add in the administrator. Select that user. I'll say they must vote and they have veto rights. Then I can click OK. So now I've configured the approval step. Next, I want to configure execution of that runbook. So you'll see now, when I created that runbook automation template earlier, it is now available as an action item for me to select. I'll click OK. And all of those properties that we defined when we set up that template are pre-configured, including on the runbook. You can see that runbook ID is still mapped out to that property ID that I selected as part of the mapping process. So I'll just click OK. Now our request template is complete. So now I can go and build my request offering based on that template and know that we're going to have a consistent workflow. So I expand out the service catalog, jump into my request offerings, I'll go and create a new request offering. So, as I mentioned earlier, the request offering, when we develop that, that is all about defining the user input that we need to kick off the runbook execution. So I'll give it a title. I could add an image if I want, so that we can have some, add the images into the catalog, pretty it up a little bit, give it a description. Select the request template that we just defined. Add user to group. Now we need to set up the user prompts. We can put some instructions for the form, which will be select Now I'll define the user prompts that I actually need from the user. So we want group names, and I'm going to deliver them a list. So I'm going to send back, create a query that will return all of the groups based on a criteria, which I'll show you shortly. And I also want the user to justify why they want to be added to those groups. Now I configure those prompts. So the justification is just going to be a freeform text field. But when I get the group name, I'm going to configure that. Because I select query, I can use data that's in my CMDB to populate a list. So I'm going to target that list based on objects of class Active Directory Group. But naturally, I've got my AD connector targeted at my domain, and I've pulled back every single group, but I don't want a user to be able to go and try and add themselves to domain admins or enterprise admins, so I'm going to filter that. Most organizations will have some sort of naming standard when it comes to their groups and users within their environment, and in this, it's no different. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to say, let's filter, I only want groups with name that contain the word test. And we'll come across to the columns. And this is what I actually want to return as part of the list. I know it says username, but it is in fact the name of the group. And I can change the display name. And finally, what I need to do is add that as a related object on the service request. So I just simply tick that box. The reason we do that is because when the runbook executes, it connects back into Service Manager and says, give me a list of the related groups that are configured on that service request so that I can go and do something. And I need that for my PowerShell script. Okay. So the prompts are configured. Now what you'll see here is I can map those prompts to properties. That list that you're seeing is actually steps within the workflow. So you'll see the approval step and the runbook execution step. So the first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to select the approval step, and in the description of the approval, I'm going to pass the justification string that is entered by the user. And then in the runbook execution step, the only property that I need is the username. And I can pass that based on the username of the user that is logged into the portal. Now I can attach some knowledge base articles if required. And then I can either leave that request offering in draft or actually publish it. If it remains in draft, it means that it won't be presented to the users in the service catalog yet. And you'll see over on the side here, there's also the option to create a change request to publish. So if I was following process, rather than me just here go ahead and publish that out, I would save it as draft and then I would create a change request. But in the instance of time, we're just going to publish that. View the summary, click create. So the final step I need to do to make that available within the service catalog is add that request offering to an existing service offering, or I could create a new service offering. I'll expand out my service offerings, and I'm going to use that existing AD services one that I already had created. Go into my request offering, click add, and it'll show me the list of ones that are available. Click OK, and OK. And as quickly as that, I mean, that's taken us about 10 minutes. Admittedly, I already had the runbook defined, but we've created a service request, or a request offering that can be executed as a service request by our users that can deliver them some real functionality. So let's see how it actually works. So I've gone into my AD Services service offering. I'll click my TechEd request offering, which I just created. I'll go to the request form. You can see now it's returned all the groups based on that criteria that I specified, so anything that's got the word test in it. I'll select TechEd Group 1, and I'm going to go and say, I need this. Click Next, Submit, and you'll see it's been submitted with service request number SR638. I'll hop into the console, jump into our work items, and you'll see that new section I talked about, the new work items called Service Request Fulfillment. I'll come in and have a look at all open service requests. There's that new one that was created, so SR638. Go ahead and edit that. Now, in the real world, because we had an approval step in there, we would generate a notification that would go to the approver that would either include details about how to go and improve it via the web console, or you could use the Exchange connector to just say, add the approve word to the subject line, and it would automatically approve the service request. But for this purpose, I'm just going to come into Activities, and I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to manually approve it. So you'll see that that step is now in progress. So if I open that up, you'll see at the moment, these are all the users that need to approve this service request. And that's because we've configured the approval condition as unanimous. But if we had 10 approvers in there, we could set the approval threshold to 20%. And that would mean that only 2 users would need to approve it before the service request can be deemed approved. So let's go ahead and approve that. And applies that. One important thing to note while we are waiting for that to approve, it doesn't normally take that long, is that we're running on CTP1, so the Community Technology Preview 1 of this product. I've been made aware that CTP2 came out this week, but we are still running on pre-beta. Try that again. Okay. So that's approved. Momentarily, what we're going to see, this in progress change to completed, and then the runbook's going to change to in progress. And at that point, This orchestrator connector is going to communicate with the orchestrator web service and initiate the execution of that runbook. So we can see that's now completed. Okay, now we're in progress. And what I'll do is I'll hop across the orchestrator server just so that you can see the runbook execute. In a moment, what we'll see is we'll see the log start, and all of the steps within that workflow or that runbook will be mapped out as a request and show us the status of that actual step. And as with everything, when you're running a demo, it's always that little bit slower. Puts you under pressure up here. Okay, so there's the runbook. It started, and you see it's kicked off. It's written an event to the event log. Now it's communicating back with Service Manager to get information about the runbook activity. And it's completed. I'll come back and have a look at that, and you'll see all the steps within that runbook executed successfully. So what we should see is if I jump across, not to that one, to my domain controller, open up the group, we can see my user has now been added as a member of that security group. I'm not going to wait because it can take a few minutes, but what would happen next is that step within the workflow would be completed, the service request would get completed, and if we've got workflow defined or notifications defined, the user would get notified that their service request has completed. To you, mate.
Okay, thanks for that, Justin. that's just one example of using the self-service portal for automation and workflow through requests. We get a lot of customers looking at Service Manager 2010 asking us about, can I have an asset catalog, a simple asset catalog? I want people better go in and choose assets, purchases they want, and they go for an approval, and then we can go through the process of procuring the asset. At the moment, we have to say, well, we can build something in SharePoint, and then we'll integrate SharePoint with Service Manager. So that's something that can very easily be built using that same functionality with no coding required at all. So now we're going to look at another significant introduction with Service Manager 2012, which is release management. So this obviously wasn't there with Service Manager 2010. And just very quickly, all the ITIL gurus amongst you would know, why do we want to do release management? And I guess I've just got two main reasons there. One is we really want to reduce the disruption caused by changes, and we can do this in one of two ways. Firstly, we want to maximize the use of release windows or planned outage windows. And release management gives us the opportunity to do this by grouping changes up and coordinating the release of those changes within a scheduled window so there's no disruption to the business. The other way we achieve this is by making sure that releases are properly tested and that they can be back, they're planned and they can be backed out if they don't go according to plan. And again, release management helps us do this by grouping up those changes and giving us a release manager or somebody to coordinate the release of all those changes. The other thing we want to do is streamline the change management process. If we have lots of changes that need to be introduced, maybe for one broader change, there's some database changes, some network changes, server changes, we can group all those up into a release, and it's a much more streamlined process to manage those as a single package. Now, release management does have an overhead, so we need to be mindful of what kind of changes we're going to really apply that sort of rigor and planning to, and really it's for large, major, high-risk changes. Or again, as I said, when we want to coordinate the release of a lot of small changes, that's where we want to apply release management. And as we'll see, and Justin will demonstrate, Service Manager really allows us to do that with three key pieces of functionality. So we can group changes into releases, and that means there is now a release work item that allows us to group the changes into that work item. That work item has specific attributes that allows us to plan the release, plan scheduled release dates, and allows us to put workflows beneath that release so we can follow a consistent workflow for each release and make sure all the steps are executed as planned. And then finally, Service Manager introduces the idea of application release lifecycle management. So it allows us to plan the full release lifecycle of an application by allowing us to have application versions that we can go through testing and then reversion and continue to do that until we're happy that we can release into the production environment. And so I'll hand back to Justin, and he'll demonstrate how release management works in Service Manager 2012.
All right, more demos. So I've jumped across to the configuration items workspace within the console. And two new areas that you'll notice in there are the concept of builds and environments. So when we're talking about managing the release of applications, so whether they be pre-packaged off-the-shelf products or custom applications that you develop in-house, having a controlled release cycle will minimize the risk when you impose with implementing those changes. So within the builds, what I've got here is I've created two applications. For the Dinner Now application, you'll see we've got two versions there. One of the versions, 1.00.03, has the status of deployed, so that's the current one we're running in our environment. But however, we've got a new build available that we want to deploy, but we just need to schedule that release and go through the process of deploying it. And in environments, we can define the environments that we've got available. So we've got a development environment, a pre-prod, and a prod environment. So let's create a release for that application. So I come across into my work items, jump into my release management, and we'll create a release record. Wrong environment. Okay, what we could do is, I've got a different environment here. If we had a template built, within that template, I'll go through and quickly create one. We could define the workflow that we must follow when we want to release some application. So I'll come into the library, come to my templates, I'll create a template. So I'm going to create a release template. I'll select the class of object, and it's a release record. Now what I can do is, as we did when we created a template for a request, we can define some workflow. I'll say, under activities, we could have a number of manual activities. We could have activity like backup the environment. Set some priorities on that. We'll just click OK. We could put an approval step in there. We could have another manual activity. That is deploy software. So we could create the workflow that we want to follow every time. Not only deploy the software, engage with an end user or a subject matter expert to go and do the application testing, the performance testing, complete the end user testing documentation, and then go through the full release. In the interest of time, we'll just leave it at just a couple of steps. That was a feature available in Service Manager 2010. At the moment, it still has a functionality in the admin workspace to import that data in. So you would have, the way I see it working, it doesn't have that same native functionality built into the end user portal. So the way I see it working at the moment would be to use the runbooks, use the connector for the integration pack for Config Manager to grab your computer object and add it to the right collection. You could potentially create a workflow. I'm not 100% sure. I'd have to sit down and have a think about that. Through the runbook automation? Okay, yeah, we could. Okay, so I'll jump back into the work items. We'll create another release record. So now you see that software release template is there. So I could create TechEd release dinner now B1.00.004. Put in some details about that, the impact of the release, the risk, priority. Come across to my release package. Here's where I can add the CIs that I want to link to that release. And that would include the build and the environment for that package. Get it in the right spot. Select that one. And then the environment. Select production. So you can see when I come in and have a look at those CIs and within that release, I can see which product and which environment we're going to be modifying. I can come across the scheduling and I can say when we need that release completed by, let's say tomorrow, and we want to do it outside of business hours today. We want it completed by 8 p.m. We'll say it doesn't cause any downtime. We can come across to the activities, and we can actually go into the activities and assign them to particular people that are going to be involved in the release. So all we'll do is come in and specify an implementer. Then once that task within the workflow changes to in progress, that user could be notified to indicate that there's an activity waiting for them to complete. So I've got everything I want in there. I'm going to click OK, and that's going to go and schedule that release. Now, if I come into editing release records, what we'll see in a moment once it creates is a release that's sitting there waiting until that time comes around. Once that time does come around, okay, editing. It will change from editing to in progress. But for the purpose of this demo, I'm just going to kick it off manually. So I can come in and say, I'm going to run that now. So because I've executed that manually, what we will see, so that we don't lose it, I can jump across to the history tab. We'll see that at 2:34, I actually initiated it manually. So it keeps a track of all the changes that are made for that release. And that includes as activities are completed. So what we'll see in a sec is the activity, you can see backup existing environment is now in progress. So the user that was assigned will get notified and that they need to go and complete that task. So I want to introduce you to the new concept of the System Center Data Warehouse. Can I see a show of hands, how many people in the audience remember a product called the System Center Reporting Manager that came out a few years ago? It's not a lot of people in the audience that remember that. It was a great idea. It provided us a data warehouse that we could use to import data from Ops Manager and Config Manager back into a central repository so that we could run reports against all the data. There were some challenges with that, cost, infrastructure required, and it sort of just disappeared. With Service Manager 2012, a new product is included with Service Manager called the Data Warehouse. It has a similar concept as Reporting Manager. It is the native data warehouse for Service Manager, but it has connectors to pull data from other data sources, including Ops Manager and Config Manager. But you're not limited to just that. You can create custom data sources to connect to other systems in your environment. They could be your SAP system, your HR system, databases hosted on SQL Server. So we can pull all that back in and centrally report on that data. And you'll see, once I do the demo, how valuable that's going to be. Because in addition to that, included with the data warehouse is these new OLAP cubes. And that enables users to self-service their reporting requests. Certainly as an ops manager, certainly as an ops manager guy and service manager, customizing reports can take me a significant amount of time. I need to jump into Report Builder, if that gives me enough control, or Visual Studio. And creating the types of reports that users want can take days. Now, using the OLAP cubes, I can slice and dice the data as I want and get really detailed reports within a matter of minutes. Let me show you how. So here I am in the data warehouse workspace. And a couple of things I want to point out to you first of all. We have cubes, and you can see the number of cubes that are available out of the box. And additional cubes will be made available via management packs. Data sources, so we can configure data sources to connect to these external systems. But what I want to do is I'm going to select the work items cube, and I'm going to analyze that cube in Excel. Now, on our Service Manager box here, we've got Excel 2010 installed. But what you could do is you don't have to run it from the console. You could open Excel on your machine and you could connect to analysis services that are running on your SQL box. So I've opened it up here and you can see it's created a pivot table for me. So I want to create a report based on the number of incidents that we've got created in our environment. I'm going to go to the dim group. So I'll say I want to see all the incidents that are opened. It's just running the query to pull all that data back in from the cube for me. Then I want to see the ones that are still active, and also any that are resolved. Of course, that's pretty basic. Let's make it look, let's corporatize it a little bit. Give it a title. That's a bit big. We'll throw a logo in. Make our columns a little bigger. Then we'll go ahead and we'll get rid of the grid lines. Then finally what I want to do is I'm going to grab all that and we'll create a pivot chart. Just use a bar graph. You can see we've made a pretty rich report in a couple of clicks. In addition to that, that might be something that we want to make available to all our users so they don't have to go and use the pivot table, recreate that report. We can just save that out to the file system. I'm just going to save it out to a folder. You'll notice that there's an existing report in that folder as well. Let that save, and I'll close that. Now, if I jump into analysis libraries within the data warehouse, we can create an analysis library that points to a UNC path. So users in the reporting workspace within the console can get access to that library. Now we'll jump into the reporting workspace. And you can see there's that new library that I just created. Once it refreshes, it's going to show us those reports. And I can open that up straight from the console into Excel. I mean, that's pretty good. But let's go ahead. Say I'm a user. I've opened up this report. I actually want to change it some more. It doesn't give me all the information that I want. So using the pivot table again, I can now slice and dice that data even more. So I'm going to come down and say, great, I've got incidents open, incidents active, incidents resolved. I want to see them by classification category. Move that out of the way. But you see that both the table and the pivot chart have also updated. Okay, but that's not enough. Let's get rid of the chart for the moment because it's going to make my table get a bit bigger. I now want to know, rather than just the classification category, what the actual incidents are within each category. So I can just come down and say, now give me a display name. It's going to collect that information for me and then present it out in the report. I don't think I prayed enough to the demo gods. Run the query. Okay, there we go. So now we've built that table with all of those incidents with each classification category and their status. That's really rich, really easy. For me to do that previously in Ops Manager or Service Manager would take a significant amount of time to customize it, and I've been able to do it within a couple of minutes. Release dates. The demo I was showing you today was on Community Technology Preview 1, which is only available to TAP customers. CTP 2 came out this week, I understand. And Beta 1 is positioned for late September. I really encourage you to get your hands on it. Give it a go. Have a look at the changes. The improvements to the service catalog and the end user portal are really, really valuable. And then it's positioned to go RTM towards the end of the year, late December. If you want any further information, we'll certainly open up for questions in a moment, but we'll be available in the session. I'll be on the Microsoft Services stand down in the Expo Hall tomorrow afternoon, or email us on any of those addresses or those Twitter handles. So with that, I'd like to open up for any questions. Yeah. Updates from which, sorry? Oh, I can't hear you, sorry, mate. It does, yeah. So you can do that now as well with Service Manager 2010 and the email connector, the Exchange connector. What it looks for is it looks for the request activity within the subject line and also a keyword. So you could use approval. Yeah, so you can also approve those requests through the web portal. Currently with Service Manager 2010, you know you've got to use the approval portal, the analyst portal, sorry, for approvals. It's all built into the one portal now. Yeah, mate.
Is there support for multi-tenancy?
The question was, is there support for multi-tenancy? Not natively, but like you do with Operations Manager, you could use user roles to do your filtering of what users can see within the console. So there are ways that you can support multi-tenancy using the Service Manager environment. So the question was the activities or the workflow within the release, whether you can turn that into a run sheet. That's a good question. I'm not sure. You could potentially print it out or do a screen capture. You can configure notifications so the users within the workflow get notified indicating that they've got tasks or manual activities waiting for them to complete. But I don't know that we could print out a complete run sheet. Well, you could go through using the you could go through and print out the, because within the release, if particularly if they were for a list of changes, you could print out the changes. So you could go through to your related items, go into your work items, and it would show you the list of all the changes that are included in that release.
Yeah.
Okay. Do you want to have a chat afterwards?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. One over there.
Sorry. Yeah, mate. Absolutely. So the question was, do any of the runbooks have the ability to integrate with Virtual Machine Manager? So Orchestrator and Apalis both have a significant number of integration packs available, one of them being Virtual Machine Manager, and that allows you to then connect to Virtual Machine Manager and say, create me a VM. I can give you a demo of that. We've got that set up here as well. So, and if for anything that doesn't have an integration pack, you've got PowerShell, you've got VBScript, you've got ways of connecting to those systems and performing tasks, but the integration packs, particularly for Virtual Machine Manager, are native, extremely easy to build. So guys, please fill out your evals. All your feedback's extremely valuable to us, particularly when we deliver these sessions over and over. So I really appreciate you taking the time. Hope that everybody goes out there, gets Service Manager 2012, and takes a good look at the product. Thank you very much.
Thanks.